This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. We're going to hear first from Mr. Keene, tracer of lost persons this week. We'll hear his story, the Skull and Crossbones murder case from June 15th, 1950. After that, it's Rogues Gallery and Latin Type, his story from May 23rd, 1946.
It's time now for Mr. Keene, tracer of lost persons. Ladies and gentlemen, Anison and Collinos present Mr. Keene, tracer of lost persons. One of the most famous characters of American fiction in one of radio's most thrilling dramas. Tonight and every Thursday at the same time, the famous old investigator takes from his file and brings to us one of his most celebrated missing persons cases. Tonight's transcribed case is entitled The Skull and Crossbones Murder Case. Here is something you should know if you ever suffer from the sudden pain of headaches, neuritis, or neuralgia. It is a way to ease the pain, often within a few minutes, a way that is incredibly fast and effective. It's Anison. Anison is like a doctor's prescription. That is, it contains not just one, but a combination of medically proven, active ingredients in easy-to-take tablet form. Thousands of people were first introduced to Anison through their own physicians or dentists. But today, it is in such a widespread use that all drug counters have it, and anyone may enjoy its benefit. Next time you suffer from the pains of a headache, neuritis, or neuralgia, by all means try Anison. You'll like the convenience of Anison tablets, and you'll be delighted with Anison's incredibly fast action. For most effective relief, use only as directed. A-N-A-C-I-N, Anison. Ask for it today at your druggist. For Mr. Keene and the Skull and Crossbones murder case. Our scene opens in a handsome mansion that fronts both fashionable Fifth Avenue and a side street in New York. An elderly man and his young wife are just finishing their dinner and are being served by a housekeeper, a woman with graying hair. The diners are eating quietly, but somehow there's an air of brooding in the large and well-furnished dining room, as if in prophecy of trouble.
Will you have a piece of pie, Mr. Barker?
No, thank you, Emily.
But it's your favorite pie, Lemuel. Aren't you feeling well?
I'm quite all right, Audrey. I'll just have some coffee.
I'll pour it for you, Mr. Barker.
Thank you, Emily.
Lemuel, something's been bothering you this evening.
Not really, my dear.
I wish you'd tell me. I can see you're worried.
Let's finish our coffee, Audrey, and we'll discuss it inside. Frankly, I have something on my mind. Audrey, this coffee,
Lemuel, what's the matter? Lemuel! What's happened, Mrs. Barker?
My husband, he's fainted.
His eyes. Mrs. Barker, look at his eyes. He hasn't fainted, he's dead.
When the police took my husband's body for an autopsy, Mr. Keene, they found he'd been poisoned. A very powerful poison had been put in the coffee he drank. A poison that reacted in a matter of seconds.
You were fortunate not to have drunk some of that poisoned coffee yourself, Mrs. Barker.
Well, Emily Cross, our housekeeper, served Lemuel, my husband, first. He'd drunk his coffee before I was starting to drink mine. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here now telling you and your partner, Mr. Clancy, my story, and asking for your help.
And the police believe it was not accidental poisoning, but murder?
Yes, Mr. Keene. And they believe they have a suspect in the case, but they have to find her first.
Are you referring to your housekeeper?
Yes. Emily Cross left the house before the police arrived, and she hasn't been seen since.
Well, sure, and that's pretty good proof that she's trying to hide something.
Yes, Mike, it is.
Mr. Keene, I've come here to ask you to help find Emily Cross. I owe it to my husband to do everything I can to find his murderer and do justice to his memory. A memory that I'll always keep with me as long as I live.
You were fond of your husband, weren't you, Mrs. Barker?
We hadn't been married very long, Mr. Keene, only a year, but it was one of the happiest years of my life. If I knew 1 week ago what I know now, maybe I could have saved him. But he only tried to tell me when it was too late.
Your husband tried to tell you what, Mrs. Barker?
The evening Lemuel was poisoned, he seemed to be very worried about something.
Yes, yes, you mentioned that before.
After the police came, Mr. Keene, we found out what was on his mind. In his pocket was a small label, and on the label was a picture of a skull and crossbones.
Saints preserve us. A skull and crossbones? Where did it come from?
My husband had evidently gotten it as a warning, Mr. Clancy, and that's what he was worried about.
Do you have that label by any chance, Mrs. Barker?
Police have it, Mr. Keene.
All right, I'll check with them about it.
Police feel that it might have been sent to my husband by Emily Cross, our housekeeper, as part of some kind of a blackmailing scheme.
Hmm. How did they come to that conclusion?
Well, I had to tell them the truth about Emily, even though I knew how bad it would make things look for her.
The truth?
She'd been keeping house for Lemuel for 11 years. Lemuel came to New York originally from Nevada, where he made a fortune in silver and retired when he was about 45. He bought the townhouse on Fifth Avenue and lived in it alone until a year ago when he married me. Emily Cross and another servant took care of the house.
I see.
Before our marriage, Lemuel had been a bachelor, and I think Emily had hoped that one day, well...
Would he marry her?
Yes, Mr. Keene. I knew Emily resented me from the very beginning, although she never dared to show it. For my part, I tried to get along with her, knowing that Lemuel wanted peace and quiet in his home.
In other words, Mrs. Barker, the police think the housekeeper, Emily Cross, wanted to marry your husband for his money. When she failed, she tried to blackmail him out of a large sum.
That's what they think, Mr. Keene.
Well, sure, there might be more than one angle to it, boss.
I agree with my partner, Mrs. Barker. This case may not be as simple as it sounds. Now, what about your husband's friends and acquaintances? Do you know of anyone who bore a grudge against him?
Oh, no, Mr. Keene, no one. Lemuel led a quiet life and a simple one in spite of our wealth. He had only one living relative, a nephew named Peter Hunt. Certainly, Peter had nothing but respect and gratitude for his uncle. Lemuel had been very generous with Peter financially, even setting him up in a business for himself.
Tell me, was the nephew Peter Hunt mentioned in your husband's will?
I don't know, Mr. Keene. The will hasn't been read yet. It's only been 24 hours since Lemuel's murder, and I haven't even spoken to our attorneys yet.
Well, I'm going to pay a visit to your home this afternoon, Mrs. Barker, after I've contacted the police and learned what they've discovered. Meanwhile, suppose you wait at home for me and try to keep calm and patient.
Oh, just knowing that you're going to help the police solve this case is enough to ease my mind, Mr. Keene. I can't tell you how grateful I am.
You can expect to see us again around 5 this afternoon, Mrs. Barker.
Very well. And thank you again. Goodbye, Mr. Clancy.
So long, Mrs. Barker.
Goodbye, Mr. Keene.
Goodbye.
Sure, the way it looks from here, Mr. Keene, that housekeeper, Emily Cross, has got a lot of explaining to do.
Well, it seems to me, Mike, that anyone who deliberately planned a murder of this kind would be a little more careful. If a man is poisoned by food or drink, the first one who comes under suspicion is the person who prepared it for him. Now, Emily Cross, the housekeeper, must have known that. Yet...
I'll get it, boss. Mr. Keene's office.
Is this Mr. Keene?
No, this is his partner, Mike Clancy.
Please put Mr. Keene on the telephone. It's very important.
Well, who's this calling?
My name is Emily Cross.
Just a second. Boss, it's Emily Cross, the housekeeper the police are looking for.
Let me take it, Mike. Hello? Hello? Hello?
What's the trouble, boss?
She's hung up, Mike. Hello?
She told me her name was Emily Cross, Mr. Keene, and she sounded scared.
She either wanted my help or there was something she wanted to reveal. She may have lost her courage at the last moment. At any rate, Mike, it may prove one thing. This case doesn't begin and end with Emily Cross. Not if she would take a chance on calling me, knowing she is wanted for murdering Lemuel Barker.
I guess we'd better report that phone call to the police, Mr. Keene.
Yes, I intend to. And after that, we'll visit Lemuel Barker's Fifth Avenue mansion and begin our investigation there.
Mr. Barker. Barker's home certainly is a show place, Mr. Keene. Look at the size of it.
One of those old mansions is formerly owned by a New York millionaire, Mike.
Mr. Keene, look. There's someone at the ground floor window, looking out into the street.
Young man. Wonder if that's Lemuel Barker's nephew, Peter Hunt.
He's turned away from the window now.
Well, let's go in, Mike. Mike, there's a letter here on the doorstep, partly under the door.
Oh, I have it, Mr. Keene. It's addressed to Mrs. Audrey Barker.
Yes?
We've come to see Mrs. Barker.
Oh, you must be Mr. Keene and Mr. Clancy. Audrey told me you were coming. Please come in, gentlemen. My name's Ted Garrett. I am a friend of the family. Here's Audrey now.
Oh, Mr. Keene, Mr. Clancy, I'm glad to see you. I don't believe you've met Ted Garrett.
We've just introduced ourselves, Audrey, and now I've got to run along. Remember, if there's anything I can do...
You've been wonderful, Ted. I can't tell you how much you've helped me in every way.
Well, at least I know I'm leaving you in good hands with Mr. Keene. I'll call you in a day or so, Audrey.
Very well, Ted.
Glad to have met you, Mr. Keene, Mr. Clancy.
Likewise.
Hey, Mr. Garrett.
Ted Garrett worked for my husband as a private secretary at one time, Mr. Keene. He left Lemuel for another position right after our marriage.
He's a strikingly handsome young man.
Yes, he is. He's been urged to make a career of the state, but doesn't seem to interest him.
Oh, here's a letter for you, Mrs. Barker. We found it outside your door.
A letter? Well, I don't recognize the handwriting. Excuse me, I'll open it.
Mike, we'd better examine the kitchen.
Mr. Keene!
What is it?
Look what I found inside this envelope.
Saints preserve us. It's a picture of a skull and crossbones.
Let me see that, Mrs. Barker.
Mr. Keene, it's the same warning my husband received before he was murdered. It means I'm marked for death, too.
Well, now, take it easy, Mrs. Barker. No one's going to harm you as long as we're here.
Look at this skull and crossbones, Mike. You recognize it?
Well, it looks like one of them labels you find on a bottle of iodine or some other poison when you buy it at the druggist.
That's exactly what it is. It was taken from a bottle of poison, but it wasn't an iodine bottle. The label's too large for that. Mrs. Barker, where's the kitchen?
Come with me, Mr. Keene.
There's a service entrance to this house, isn't there, Mrs. Barker?
Yes, there are two. Part of the house front's on the side street, and both the doors are there. One is for tradesmen and one for servants. This is the door to the kitchen and pantry, Mr. Keene.
We'll have to make a systematic search through all the cabinets, Mike. Suppose you start...
What was that?
Sounded like a door slamming.
It may have been one of the bedroom doors upstairs, Mr. Keene. When a door is left open up there, a draft often slams it shut.
Is anyone upstairs?
I don't think so.
Maybe I'd better have a look, boss.
Yes, Mike, go ahead.
Oh, Mr. Keene, you think there may be someone else in the house?
Well, if there is, we'll find out soon enough, Mrs. Barker. And I'll keep my gun handy. Just in case. Stand where you are, young fella.
What?
Don't move or I'll shoot.
Who are you?
That's a question you'll answer first.
If you're a thief...
I'm a private investigator, mister. My name is Mike Clancy. What's yours?
Peter Hunt.
Peter Hunt? You're Mr. Barker's nephew, eh?
Yes.
Well, what are you doing up here snooping around the hall?
I dropped in for some things I left here several weeks ago when I spent a weekend with Uncle Lemuel and his wife. Would you mind putting that gun away? It frightens me.
Well, you could have told Mrs. Barker you were here. Come on downstairs with me, young fella.
I'm in a hurry. I mean, get out of my way.
Come back here. What's up, Mike? Look out, Mr. Keene. He's running for the stairs.
Just a moment, young man. Let go of me.
All right, boss. I'll handle it from here.
Let me go, do you hear?
Stay put, I say.
You're tearing my clothes.
Be
I see.
Quiet or I'll use my gun on you.
All right, Mike. Let him go. Who is this young man?
Well, he says he's Mr. Barker's nephew, boss. Peter Hunt.
Look what you've done. You pulled my coat sleeve off and torn my shirt.
So I see. Mike, look at his right forearm.
Mr. Keene.
What's the matter? What are you looking at? It's only a tattoo on my arm.
Yes, a tattoo of a skull and crossbone. Mike, it's a replica of that label. Something tells me that Emily Cross, the housekeeper, isn't the only one in this case who has to do a great deal of explaining.
In just a moment, we'll return to Mr. Keene and the Skull and Crossbones murder case. Meanwhile, stop tooth decay and unpleasing breath. Yes, stop tooth decay and unpleasing breath that breeds between the teeth. Use Colinos toothpaste with dental floss action. Your dentist will tell you, brush your teeth after meals to stop decay. Clean those cracks and crevices deep between your teeth to guard against unpleasing breath. Now Colinos gives you dental floss action. That is, sends thousands of active cleansing bubbles to help dislodge bits of food that can cause unpleasing breath. What's more, foamy, refreshing Colinos brightens teeth by removing ordinary yellow surface stains. Helps stop tooth decay. Get Colinos toothpaste with dental floss action today. Now back to Mr. Keene and the Skull and Crossbones murder case. Mr. Keene, the famous investigator, and his partner Mike Clancy are investigating the death by poison of wealthy Lemuel Barker. There have been two suspects uncovered thus far. One of them is Mr. Barker's housekeeper, Emily Cross, who is still at large and being sought by the police. And the other is a young nephew of the victim, Peter Hunt, who has just been apprehended in the victim's Fifth Avenue home. Now, as Mr. Keene and Mike continue to question Peter Hunt.
I may as well tell you that you're under suspicion for the murder of your uncle, Lemuel Barker.
No, I didn't kill him. Anyway, who are you to accuse me?
My name is Keene. This is my partner, Mike Clancy.
Maybe you've heard them names before, Mr.
Keene, a great investigator? Well, I didn't know.
Before your uncle was poisoned to death, someone sent him a warning. It was a skull and crossbones from the label on a poison bottle. A few minutes ago, Audrey Barker, your uncle's wife, received the same warning in a letter.
And now we find a tattoo of a skull and crossbones on your forearm, young fella.
This tattoo was made years ago as a joke, when I was a kid. I've grown to loathe it, but it's almost impossible to get rid of a tattoo mark once you have it on your body.
You're telling us. I'll bet dollars to donuts you'd have gotten rid of it fast if you could.
You can't believe that this tattoo on my arm has anything to do with those skull and crossbone warnings and my uncle's murder. It's just a coincidence, I tell you.
Peter, you still haven't explained what you're doing here in your uncle's house.
I told Mr. Clancy before. I came back for something I'd left here several weeks ago.
What was it?
Nothing important, Mr. Keene.
That's it, Mike.
No, wait. I'll show you what I took. You'll find it on me anyway, I guess. Here.
Mr. Keene, to cancel check.
No, it's not canceled, Mike. It's marked no funds. It was made out to Lemuel Barker for $5,000, and it's signed by Peter Hunt. What's the story behind this check, Peter?
Would you believe me if I tell you?
Well, you've got little to lose one way or another. If you're in a very bad spot already.
A week before my uncle was murdered, Mr. Keene, he found out I'd taken some money from his house safe here. I knew the combination.
You took the money or stole it?
I admit it was a theft, Mr. Clancy, but I was in trouble. Lots of trouble. A few months ago, Uncle Lemuel had staked me to $8,000 to go into business. Instead, I took the money and gambled it away.
Go on, Peter.
I gambled the money away and went into debt for $5,000 more, so I stole the $5,000 from Uncle Lemuel's safe to cover my debt.
Your uncle found out about it?
Yes, Mr. Keene. He was furious. So furious, I thought he was going to turn me over to the police, so I lied to him. I told him I'd put the money in my own bank account. I hadn't used it yet.
So you wrote out a check, then. A check you knew was worth it.
That's right, Mr. Keene. Oh, I've learned my lesson all right. It was a little too late. Uncle Lemuel called me and told me about the bad check. Then he gave me 24 hours to make it up. I'd be ungrateful. I deserved all the help and affection he'd given me in the past. Suppose it was. Anyway, the next thing I knew, I was told that Uncle Lemuel was murdered. So I wanted to get that bad check back in case...
In case the police found it and concluded that because of it you'd murdered your uncle? I'm afraid your story only makes things more difficult for you, Peter.
Mr. Keene, you've got to believe me. I didn't murder my uncle.
Peter, what's the matter?
Aunt Audrey, back me up. They think I murdered Uncle Lemuel.
Oh, no, Mr. Keene. No, Peter was very devoted to Lemuel. I believe in his innocence.
Circumstances happen to be against him, however. Mrs. Barker, what have you got there in your hand?
The bottle of poison you were looking for, Mr. Keene. When you left the kitchen, I continued to search for it, and I found it. It's a form of poison we used once to kill ants in the kitchen, and the label is missing.
The label was one of the skull and crossbone warnings that was sent to you and your husband. That's your telephone, isn't it, Mrs. Barker?
Oh, yes, there's an extension up here in the bedroom, Mr. Keene.
Well, perhaps you'd better let me answer it. Mike, take Peter Hunt downstairs and remain with him.
Move along, young fella, and no funny business.
Hello?
Is this Mr. Keene?
Yes.
Oh, this is 10 Carat. Glad you're still there at Audrey Barker's house. I'm calling from my apartment. Emily Croft, the housekeeper, just came to me for help.
She's with you now, Mr. Garrett?
Yes. I persuaded her to talk to you.
How soon can you bring her over here to Mrs. Barker's home?
10 minutes. I have my car.
All right, come over immediately.
Okay, sir.
Mrs. Barker, Emily Croft, the housekeeper, seems to have given herself up.
She's with Ted Garrett?
Yes, they're coming over right now. Meanwhile, I want you to show me just where you found this poison bottle. Maybe the clue I'm looking for. The clue that will break this case and identify your husband's murderer.
I found that poison bottle right here, Mr. Keene. In this cabinet with these other bottles. They're mostly cleaning fluids.
Are they, Mrs. Barker? Do you know anything about poisons?
No, nothing at all.
When you wanted to get rid of those ants that invaded your home, who bought the bottle of poison?
Why, Emily Croft, the housekeeper, did. She told me she was going to. She handles everything connected with the kitchen.
I see.
Well, boss, Ted Garrett's here with the housekeeper, Emily Croft.
All right, Mike. I'll go in and see them at once. Where is Peter Hunt?
In the study, boss.
Well, perhaps you better stay with him while I talk to Emily Croft. Mrs. Barker, I think you'd better be there with me when I do.
I know how it looks to me, Mr. Keene, but I didn't murder Mr. Barker.
Then why did you run away, Emily?
I ran away because I was afraid. I thought the police would suspect me. When I gave myself up to Mr. Garrett, I did it because I couldn't stand hiding like an animal anymore.
You tried to reach me before by phone, Emily?
Yes, Mr. Keene, but I lost my nerve and I hung up. Then later I thought of Mr. Garrett. He was good to me when he worked with Mr. Barker's secretary. And I thought he might help me some way.
I just can't believe it, Emily. You are a woman Mr. Barker trusted.
Mr. Garrett, you think I murdered him too?
Emily, I have an umbrella there and a picture of a skull and crossbone. Is the address on this letter in your handwriting?
No, Mr. Keene. No, I never sent that letter.
Mrs. Barker.
Yes, Mr. Keene.
I'm afraid I must ask you to do something rather distasteful.
What is it?
I have a warrant here in my pocket. I want you to sign it and then I'll fill it out. For Emily Cross's arrest on the charge of murdering your husband.
No.
Emily Croft is fainting, Mr. Keene.
Help her to that couch in the next room, Mr. Garrett. Get her some water.
All right. I will.
Mrs. Barker, you can use my pen. Will you sign this paper, please?
Yes, Mr. Keene.
And now your address underneath. That's fine, Mrs. Barker.
Why, Mr. Keene, I thought you said that this was a warrant for Emily Cross's arrest. It's only a blank piece of paper.
Yes, but an important one. It proves to me that Emily Croft is innocent.
Emily is innocent?
Yes, Mr. Garrett. It was Audrey Barker, Lemuel's wife, who poisoned him.
Are you out of your mind, Mr. Keene?
Far from it, Mrs. Barker. You made a slip a few minutes ago when you brought me that bottle of poison. Of course, you didn't realize
it. What do you mean?
You told me you knew nothing about poison. And that Emily Cross handled everything in the kitchen. Yet you picked out the one bottle of poison in that cabinet correctly, even though there were several bottles inside with no labels on them.
But it was just by chance, that's all.
No, not by chance. You knew which was which, Mrs. Barker, because you used this bottle of ant poison to murder your husband. You knew the bottle all too well.
No, that's a lie.
This blank piece of paper I gave you to sign will prove my theory completely. The handwriting is exactly the same as the handwriting on the envelope which you sent to yourself, enclosing a skull and crossbones warning, like you sent your husband before his death.
Audrey, is it true?
Ted, don't look at me that way.
Mike?
Yes, Mr. Keene?
You have your handcuffs with you?
I sure do, sir. A murderer. You, Audrey.
Oh, you fool, Ted. I only did so we could be together.
So that we could.
When you left Emil's employ, I knew it was because you thought you were falling in love with me. And I was crazy about you, Ted. Couldn't you see?
Is that true, Mr. Garrett?
Yes, Mr. Keene. I left Mr. Barker when he married Audrey.
But I swear I had nothing to do with this horrible crime.
There was more to it than love to you. Lemuel Barker was years older than his wife. And she's a beautiful woman. He could have married many younger and handsomer men. But she chose one with money instead.
I could kill you.
You planned your husband's murder, Mrs. Barker, knowing you'd inherit his wealth. Believing you could later marry Ted Garrett. But you made one mistake too many.
Did I?
You came to me trying to use me as a foil to throw suspicion on an innocent woman, Emily Cross. It was all part of your scheme. But you'll find that by coming to me, you only provided it a noose around your own neck. Put the handcuffs on her, Mike.
No. No, you won't.
Oh, there's no use of putting up a fight, lady. It's all over.
We'll be able to tell the housekeeper, Emily Cross, that she's free of all suspicion. And instead, Audrey Barker face the judge and jury for her husband's murder.
And so Mr. Keene finds the solution to the Skull and Crossbones murder case. The next time you're suffering from the pains of headache, neuritis, or neuralgia, try Anacin. You'll bless the day you heard of this incredibly fast way to relieve these pains. Now, the reason Anacin is so wonderfully fast-acting and effective is this. Anacin is like a doctor's prescription. That is, Anacin contains not just one, but a combination of medically proven active ingredients in easy-to-take tablet form. Thousands of people have received envelopes containing Anacin tablets from their own dentist or physician. And in this way, you have discovered the incredibly fast relief Anacin brings from pain of headache, neuritis, or neuralgia. So next time such pain strikes, take Anacin. For most effective relief, use only as directed. Your druggist has Anacin in handy boxes of 12 and 30, and economical family-sized bottles of 50 and 100. The name is Anacin, A-N-A-C-I-N. Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, is based on the novel Mr. Keene. The radio sequel is originated and produced by Frank and Ann Hummert. Dialogue by Lawrence Klee. Directed by Richard Leonard. Bennett Kilpack plays Mr. Keene. It is on the air every Thursday at this time. Don't miss Mr. Keene next Thursday. Ever suffer heartburn or upset stomach from acid indigestion? Face new Bisodol Mint, medically proven, quickly rid stomach of that blown-up feeling. Give longer-lasting relief than baking soda. Yes, hours of relief. Bisodol Mint not only neutralize, but actually carry away excess stomach acid. Soothe irritated stomach lining. Let you sleep all night long when acid indigestion strikes. Carry new Bisodol Mint for fast relief anywhere, anytime. Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, will be on the air next Thursday at this same time. This is Larry Elliott saying goodbye for Mr. Keene and the Whitehall Pharmacal Company, makers of Anacin and Colinose, and many other dependable high-quality drug products. This program was transcribed. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Hello, creeps. This is a very tired T4Y on the Mystery Playhouse. Tonight's story will be told by Dick Powell, who plays Richard Rogue now, in another graphic adventure from Rogue's Gallery.
When When I got on this Rattler for my trip to Central City, I was not exactly a joy boy. I hate riding on trains. But a couple of hours later, I'm a happy chappy. Because who do I run across in the lounge car is a little ambition of mine by the name of Betty Callahan, a newspaper woman who is cheating the movies. She's a pocket-sized brunette with cornflower blue eyes and the complexion which wouldn't come off on the shoulder of my blue gabardine suit. I rescued her from the wolves in Uncle Sam's clothing, who were making life too interesting for her in the club car, and we retired to my compartment for a talk about old times.
You have here, Richard.
A guy can get pretty lonesome in a place like this, you know, Betty.
Get that gleam out of your eye, Richard. I'm perfectly comfortable right where I am.
Oh, all right, all right. I just thought maybe you'd like to sit here for me and look out of the window.
You're so thoughtful. You haven't even told me where you're going. Did things finally get too hot for you at home?
Please. I'm going to Central City, baby, for the same reason you are. The Charlie Miller trial.
Don't tell me you've learned to write.
Very funny. I'm an expert witness, and I've got a briefcase full of research here. That's going to make the DA very happy. Come a little closer.
Oh, all right. What do you think? Is Charlie going to get the works?
Oh, let's not talk about Charlie. Talk about me.
Don't you ever get tired of that subject?
No, it fascinates me. Come on, what are you sitting clear over there for? You like it here.
Why?
Did your mother ever tell you anything?
About fellows like you? Plenty.
Why don't you drop that front page character, Angel? We've known each other for a long time.
Stop pulling.
Well, I was just trying to...
Well, stop trying.
How can you be so mean to me? Ever since the first time I saw you, Betty, I've been stuck on you. No kidding.
Oh, Richard. Did anybody ever believe that line?
Once in a while. You know, something's going to happen to you in just a minute, baby.
Will I like it?
Let's find out.
Shh. Quiet.
Oh, brother. What's the idea, lady? This is a private compartment.
Please, I'm sorry to intrude.
Who is this girl, Richard?
I never saw her before. Who are you?
I had to come in here. My life is in danger.
Well, offhand, lady, I don't think you improved your situation any breaking in here when you did.
Oh, why does everything have to happen to me? Why don't you buy a ticket, Latin type, and then you wouldn't have to play hide-and-seek with the conductor?
I had to come in here. I'm hiding. There's a man on this train who has designs on my life.
Yes, what Bernhardt could have done with that line.
You don't believe me?
That's right. Now scram.
Oh, don't answer it. Please. It's him.
The guy with the design? I want to take a gander,
Jim. Oh, no, no, no. I'll answer it myself.
I want to talk to you a minute, Diane.
It's impossible. Quick, there's nothing more to say.
I think maybe you'd better. I know where you're going, Diane, and I know what you've got. Now, do you want to come out here?
All right. I'll be with you in a minute.
I'll be waiting.
Want me to take care of that punk for you?
You stay out of this, Richard.
Please, will you keep this briefcase for me? Don't let anyone touch it. Please.
Next time, why don't you get a drawing room with a revolving door, Richard?
Oh, shut up. You know, I'm kind of worried about that girl. I'm going to feel pretty silly if she comes up dead. For the next 2 minutes, I worried about Diane and the man who had designs on her life. But I'm a romanticist at heart. So I spent the next 58 minutes trying to spellbind Betty into seeing things my way. But she wasn't looking. At the end of an hour, my chances were still about on the ratio of Little Rock Junior High against Notre Dame. So I gave up.
Well, it's been an hour since our visitor checked off. What do you think, Mr.?
The dame's either as goofy as a cub outfielder or she's really in a jam.
You're pulling me. I'll put my ex on the first stanza. Let's take a look in that briefcase she left behind.
Hey, wait a minute, honey. That's my briefcase.
Oh, I'm sorry. Don't get huffy, Richard. Those two briefcases are practically identical.
Yeah, I guess they aren't that. Well, give me mine. I'm going to put it up here on the rack. Hey, what is this?
Pipe down, pretty boy.
Turn the lights back on, Richard.
Shut up, lady. All right, give me that briefcase, pretty boy.
Get that flashlight out of my eyes.
Keep your hands where they are.
Give me that flashlight.
Sorry, lady, but you asked for it. Now, pretty boy, give me that bag.
Hey, what's the gimmick? What are you pulling that emergency cord for?
I don't want to have to shoot you. Get your hands out of your coat. So long, pretty boy.
As he pulled the cord, I could see the gleam of a gun in this character's fist, and I didn't want any samples of his marksmanship. But I could hear Betty groaning on the floor at my feet, and all of a sudden I felt that I had to get him before he jumped out of that window he'd knocked out with the butt of his pistol. I made a dive for him, expecting to stop a little lead. When I got where he'd been, he wasn't there. He was behind me. I knew that when I heard the flashlight whizzing through the air. It connected expertly right behind my ear. And there I went again into the land of Nod, which is practically my home away from home. Everything was very quiet for a while, and I slept peacefully.
Come on, Rogie. Come on. Get up, Rogue. Get up.
Huh?
Snap out of it. Betty's been hurt.
Betty?
The man got away. You've got to get up.
Oh, I can't. Oh, my head.
Get up. Get up. Wake up. Get up.
What's that noise?
It's at the door. Someone wants in.
Oh, they'll go away.
Snap out of it, Rogie. Let him in. Betty's been hurt.
What happened? I can't remember.
Remember the man? Remember the girl? He came back and...
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, cut it out. Stop that pounding. Ooh, my head.
You're in a jam, Rogie. Betty's been hurt. Wake up. Get up.
I can't. I can't. What's that pounding? Pounding. Pounding. Cut it out. Cut it out. Stop it. Do you hear? Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Okay, okay. Betty. Oh, Betty, you poor kid.
Hello in there. Hello.
I'm coming. I'm coming. Just keep your shirt on.
I demand an explanation of what's been going on in here.
Come on, come on. Help me bring this girl out of it.
The window broken. Do you know what that does to the air conditioning in this car?
Well, a man got out of that window while the train was stopped.
Who pulled the emergency cord?
This guy. He came in here waving a gun around, took a briefcase that some dame had left here, stopped the train, and knocked our brains out. I just came to, and he's gone. So let's face it, conductor. He must have jumped out the window.
Yes. And what happened to the young lady who left the briefcase here in your compartment?
I don't know.
Who was she?
I never saw her before. Oh, you okay, baby?
Oh, sure. Takes a bump like that. Clear up my mind. Who was that fellow?
I don't know.
I'm holding you responsible for the damage that's been done to this compartment. What's your name?
The name's Richard Rogue. Now get out of here, I'll give you some more things to hold me responsible for. Personal things.
I'm the conductor on this train,
okay,
and I'm...
Okay, okay. We'll still be on your train when you pull into Central City. Goodbye now.
Now everything's all right, folks. Just get back to your seat, please. We're going ahead immediately. Please return to your seat.
I've heard you were dynamic when you got started, Richard.
Yeah, look, that Daffy Dame that came charging in here wasn't kidding. That briefcase of hers is full of dynamite.
Was, you mean? It's gone. Out the window.
Oh, no, it isn't. That window jumper took mine, remember? I had it in my hand, ready to put it up on the luggage rack when he came in. Give me hers. It's right over there behind you.
Oh, sure. It's locked.
I want to know what's in it, don't you?
I love life. I just wish I'd never seen it.
Well, comb the hair over that lump on your head, baby. We're going to find and confer with the young lady who spark-plugged this carnival of mayhem.
Okay, I'm in. I owe that brunette a little something. Go talk to her.
My head had that familiar old feeling of having been washed in a washing machine, and I was feeling anything but cute as we wandered down the aisle
asking porters if they'd seen a big brunette wearing a blue pinstripe suit and a hat with cherries on it. That was Diane, you know. Finally, in car 73, the porter recognized the description and told us that the lady was in drawing room A. Naturally, the conductor came along about this time. His glares bounced off that haze of pain that surrounded me like ricocheting bullets. He went with us, under protest, to drawing room A. Oh, no answer.
He isn't in. Why don't you look in the club car?
I did. Knock again.
Why don't you try the door?
Okay. Oh, it's open. Conductor, mind if we go in and look around?
What right have you to enter the stateroom of a strange woman?
She entered his.
You sue me if you want to, but I'm going in there and take a look around. Nobody home, I guess.
Well, I hope you're satisfied. Tearing up the train, walking into other people's drawing rooms.
Look, mister, I'm trying to help you. I've been all over this train. The same has to be someplace.
All right. She's not here. And I can't stand around all night.
Look, over there, under the berth.
I don't see anything.
You don't? Come here, conductor. Hmm? What do you think that is? Red ink?
Why?
That's blood. Wait till I pull these blankets back.
Oh, I'm getting out of here.
Are you convinced now that something's happened to that girl?
Yes, I suppose so.
She must be in here someplace. Open the door to that wardrobe.
Oh, Richard.
Steady, Betty.
Here. Help me move her up on the berth.
No. Leave her right where she is. The cops won't want to move.
Oh, that knife and that boat.
She's dead.
Yes, she was dead. And all we knew about her was that her name was Diane. And that I had the briefcase which must contain the reason for her murder. A pleasant thought. I took one more look at the dead girl, shuddered, and pulled Betty out of that room. I wondered what was going to happen next, and who was going to be the main attraction.
I must have been born under a police star. No matter what I start out to do, I end up in more trouble than a jitterbug at a square dance. Me? I start out to be an expert witness, and I wind up in the sheriff's office in Central City trying to explain a murder. Betty was enjoying every minute of this comedy of terrors, being a news hawk. She was jumping with enthusiasm and theories, the sheriff was jumping with importance, and I was just jumping. I don't like murder unless there's a profit in it for me.
Sit down, Rogue. You shouldn't be so nervous.
Well, we should be getting a report of that murdered woman, shouldn't we, Sheriff? We're not going to get any place until we find out who she was.
Oh, my men are working on it, Rogue. Now, just take it easy. We know our business here in Central City.
Uh-huh. Well, it's your business. It isn't mine. So if you don't mind, I think I'll shove off. I've got a little business to take care of myself.
Just a moment. I'll,
Hey, where have you been picked
up? But we got a positive identification on that lady who was stabbed on the train, Sheriff. And who do you think she was?
Well, who was she? Get to it, Hennessy.
She was Diane Miller, wife of Charlie Miller, who's on trial for murdering Big Joel and Bertie.
No kidding.
You can go, Hennessy. Sheriff Mills. Yeah? All over the place, huh? Great work, Sergeant. Okay, I'll have a pick out on him in 10 minutes. Thanks.
Well, what's the good news? Have anything to do with the case?
Well, Rogue, the man who stabbed Mrs. Charlie Miller was Flip Stone, Miller's best friend, and his first lieutenant in the slot machine racket. His fingerprints were all over the knife. How do you like that?
I don't like it. Doesn't make sense yet.
Richard, I'm going to go call this into my city desk. Will you meet me at the hotel and bring me up to date on what has happened?
Sure, I'll take care of it, baby. You run along, keep your readers informed.
You might as well go along with her, Rogue. We don't need your help to solve this case. We're perfectly capable of taking care of it ourselves.
Well, swell. Lots of luck.
I've heard all about you, Rogue. Just keep your hands in your pockets while you're in Central City. We don't like smart private detectives very well. Remember that.
I was all set to try and help the guy until he said that. I don't approve of people going around sticking knives through other people, and I'm willing to throw in my nickel's worth to see that they're discouraged. Then this politician with muscles running up to the part in his hair gets tough with me. Oh, well, he probably had run across some wrong guys in his time. Anyway, Betty and I lambed back to the Hotel Splendide. We went up to my room because we wanted to talk. She called in her story to her paper,
And I sat in the window and talked the deal over with myself. She finished her phone call.
I really walked into a scoop this time. The city editor's having hallucinations. He even promised me a raise.
Throw the bolt in that door, will you?
Why?
Oh, don't be so conceited. I want to take a look in this briefcase all the excitement is about.
Of course, you know you can get put away in the pokey for a long time for withholding evidence.
Hmm. You're the worrying type, aren't you?
Why do you suppose Flip Stone rubbed out his boss's better half?
Maybe she asked idiotic questions while he was trying to open a briefcase.
You know it's locked.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ruin the lock with my knife. Too bad.
That's breaking and entering or something, isn't it?
Illegal entry.
Oh, that'll add 20 years to your sentence.
I'll still be a young man to get out. Oh, come on. Come on, I'm not going to be browbeaten by a lock. Hey, $100 bills, millions of them. Take a gander at that, Betty.
Money!
Oh, you catch on quick. No wonder Flip Stone was so anxious to get his hot little pink fist on this letter. You count them, will you?
I'd love to.
There's some letters in here I want to be impolite about.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1. Richard, there must be $50,000 here.
Baby, this is the works. These letters explain a lot of things.
I'm counting. Wait a minute. 81, 82, 83, 84. Don't bother me. I never saw this much money before.
No? Well, I know now why Flip Stone put the kiss of death on the lovely Diane. He had to keep these letters and that money from being delivered. He didn't want Charlie Miller to beat that rap.
4, 5, 6, 7. I'm through 6,000 already, and I haven't even made a hole in the pile.
Oh, the guy who wrote these letters was a character.
7, 7, 7, 7,
give me the sheriff's office, please. Thank you.
8,000, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 9,000. Oh, I wonder what a nice yacht would cost me.
Chicken, if that dough was yours, you'd be Mrs. Richard Rogue tonight.
Oh, would I? 6, 7, 8, 9.
Hello,
9,
hello,
000.
Sheriff's office. Let me talk to Sheriff Mills. Richard Rogue calling.
Thanks. Gracious. 7, 8, 9, 11,000. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Oh, hello,
7,
Sheriff.
8,
this is Richard Rogue.
12,000.
Yeah. Come down to 7:30 at Hotel Splendid right away, will you? Well, don't ask so many questions. I'm going to make you a big man. I want you to help me plan a surprise party. Right. Now hurry. Hey, that's a lot of letters you got there, Betty, darling. Flip Stone really grabbed a handful of disappointment when he bailed out with that my satchel by mistake. There wasn't nearly that much money in mine.
Who could that be?
I don't know. Look, I'll get over behind the door. You open it, and we'll look our company over before we put this artillery away.
All right. I don't like guns.
They come in handy sometimes. Okay.
Put them up, Letty. I'm coming in.
You can't come in here.
Shut up. Just keep backing up. I want that dough. You split bags on me.
I didn't do it.
Where's Rogue? I've checked every hotel register in town looking for him. Where is he? I want to slap him around a little bit for...
Oh, Richard, why did you wait so long?
I administered that pistol anesthesia with masterful precision. Flip was going to have a long ride on the dream train. Betty and I took a sheet off the bed, tore it into strips, and tied Flip up like traffic at Hollywood and Vine. Then we looked around for some place to hide him. We finally picked out a spot that any old maid would have thought of immediately. We slipped him under one of the twin beds. Then we finished counting the money. $25,000. Oh, it looked beautiful there. But I had things to do. I called the sheriff. He hadn't left the jail yet. So I went down there to talk with him. And while I was there, I had a chat with Charlie Miller. A very satisfactory chat. Then the sheriff and I went back to the hotel. Betty made a phone call. And we waited for company. The sheriff and I squeezed into a closet when a knock came at the door.
Who is it?
He just called and invited me down.
Okay. Come in.
Thanks. Now, let's get this over with, Mrs. Miller. I want to get out of here.
Don't be in such a hurry. How do I know you're on the level?
You have the money with you?
Yes. I'll give it to you after you sign this little document.
What is it?
I'll read it to you.
All right.
I, Louis Tobin, a member of the jury in the trial of Charles Miller for the murder of Big Joe Lambetti, do hereby acknowledge the receipt of $25,000 from the hand of Mrs. Charles Miller, for which I agree to hold out against the conviction of Charles Miller and to find him not guilty. I also agree to use my best influence to make the other jurors agree to a not guilty verdict. And that's where you sign.
Oh, you know I can't sign a thing like that.
And look, I've got 25 grand in Hudrins ready for you. You get it when you sign your name. Right there.
No, I
If you
can't.
Keep your word and my husband gets a hung jury or an acquittal, this receipt will be torn up. If you don't, I'll give it to the newspapers. Sign it.
Okay. Okay, I'll sign it.
Here's a pen.
Okay. There, I'll just hang on to this until you give me the money.
Here you are. $250 $100 bills. There we are. You want to count it?
No, I just want to get out of here, that's all.
Don't move, Tobin. The sheriff and I have both have you covered.
You double-crossed me. I was just
trying to... Skip it, Tobin. I'll shake him down, Sheriff. He's got $25,000 on him that you marked yourself.
You haven't got a thing on me. I was just
trying... Get your hands out here.
Well,
Miss Callahan, could I have that confession?
Oh, sure, if you'll let me have it back for a photostat later.
Okay, it'll be yours, exclusive. And now I'm going to take this man down and lock him up where he belongs.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Very practical. Oh, here, Sheriff, you better take this money with you. I just spend everything I get my hands on.
Oh, yes, of course. Thank you, Rogue.
You better count it.
Later.
No, Sheriff, you better count it now.
I can't take the time now, Rogue. If there's any money missing, I'll be back. And there had better not be any money missing.
I had news for the sheriff, but he was so impressed with his pinch that he couldn't see me. Oh, well, I knew he'd be back. You see, I'm a practical guy. I had palmed and pocketed $5,000 out of that wad of dough I took off Tobin. I showed it to Betty and she was horrified, but I knew what I was doing. So I just sat there and waited for the door to take a beating. And it did. Who is it?
It's the sheriff. Let me in, Rogue.
Why, Sheriff, you're all red in the face. It's your age.
I knew you were a crook the first time I set eyes on you, Rogue.
You probably studied psychology at Barber College. That's what makes you so smart.
There was only $20,000 in that briefcase when I counted the money at the jail. And I had four honest men as witnesses.
Well, bless your heart.
Where's that other $5,000, Rogue?
In my pocket, Sheriff. And that's where it's going to stay.
That's larceny. And you're under arrest.
Now, is that silly? Look, Sheriff.
Oh, please, mister. Tell him. Don't needle him anymore.
Well, Sheriff, remember when I went in the cell to see Charlie Miller?
What's that got to do with the missing funds?
Well, he posted a $5,000 reward for the killer of his wife with you, didn't he?
Yes, I suppose he did.
You suppose? You know he did. Well, if you look under the bed there in the bedroom, you'll find Flip Stone, the guy who murdered Diane Miller. It was very simple. I just collected my reward in advance, that's all. My friend the sheriff was a little upset for a while, but he calmed down when Betty brought in a photographer to take his picture for the papers. Isn't it funny what some people will do to get their pictures in the papers? I had to practically wrestle him to keep him out profiling me, the big ham. Well, I split the reward with Betty, of course. Well, I didn't just exactly split it with her. I gave her $2,000. But she didn't want to take anything. Isn't that just like a woman, though? Or is it?
We're a little late, folks. This is T4Y. Good night. Sleep tight. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
That does it for this episode of Case Closed. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of old-time radio crime. Between now and then, you can find past episodes of this show and more old-time radio at relicradio.com. Also find a link there to our Shoutcast stream and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for relicradio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.